We're going to talk about the ALCS, the NLCS, some great baseball that's already been played. But it's, let's face it, if you're a Twins fan, this is rumor season. Free agency is not here. The team is not making trades yet, but it doesn't stop people from speculating. Let's speculate here on the Chin Music Show. This is our baseball show at TalkNorth.com. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod. By the way, next live show, October 20th, 6 p.m. at the Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie. It's in a weird location. GPS will get you close enough. You'll be able to eyeball it. Come out and join us. We're going to give something away. Lavelle's going to bring his buoyant personality. Roy and I are going to bring our cynical personalities. But we're happy to talk with everybody who shows up. Roy's going to bring a bat. And maybe we'll have him actually do a demonstration that, like we've been threatening to do for a long time. Thanks to our other sponsors, Better Edge, Minnesota Propane, and a new sponsor. We want to welcome 11 Wells Distillers. I'm going to be there with my wife, Stacy, tonight to try out their bourbon, all their other varieties. Looking forward to checking that out. But again, for today, it's Rumor Central. And Lavelle, you told us you heard a rumor.
Yeah, there was a report a couple of days ago about a potential Josh Donaldson trade to the Milwaukee Brewers, who I think were starting a middle infielder at third base during the playoff series against the Braves. Donaldson would go to Milwaukee for two prospects. I'm calling them prospects because I read the names, I didn't recognize them. So I'm guessing they're not major leaguers. And the Twins would have to fork over $15 million in cash to help offset salary. So they would get out of some money of Donaldson's $23 million. Is it $23 million a year, I believe? And they'd free up some money they could use elsewhere. And that would open up third base. Maybe for a rookie or not, maybe.
For Miranda, maybe? Yeah,
Jose from Miranda, maybe, or Arias or someone. So that would be interesting. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that Josh Donaldson has a limited no-trade clause. So he's got some teams that he refuses to play for. I don't know if Milwaukee is one of those teams or not. But that would be interesting. Donaldson in that lineup with Yelich and a couple other guys, he definitely would augment that lineup. I'm guessing they'll bring back Eduardo Escobar, I would imagine. And the Twins, once again, would have flexibility.
Donaldson's going to have to teach Yelich how to hit again.
Yes. Yes. Well, Yelich and Cody Bellinger, I don't know what's happened to those weird two guys. Although Bellinger stepped up during the postseason for the Dodgers.
Yeah, that was big.
But he was batting 168 during the regular season. Cody Bellinger, a former 44-homer hitting guy. And Yelich, who was like an MVP type player.
I kind of get Bellinger a little bit just because of what his swing is like and what he's always tried to hit the ball out of the ballpark. Then he got hurt, you know, shoulder or something, and trying to come back. Something hurt. And then trying to come back, you can get messed up, you know, when you're trying to come back from injuries and your swing gets all messed up. But Yelich is just a total head scratcher for me, because when I first saw him when he was in Miami his first year, I thought, man, have they got something here? That's one of the best swings I've ever seen. So I can't figure that out. But back to Donaldson's, the Donaldson deal, I'm just going to say I like Brian Donaldson a lot. I thought he played really, I thought he did pretty much what the Twins wanted him to do. He played good third base. Mm-hmm. He had a over 800 on base plus slug. I mean, it was just a classic Donaldson deal. He's an OPS guy, big time. He'll hit some really important home runs. He'll drive in some tough runs. He makes you a little mad sometimes with some of the at-bats that he has. But he was Donaldson. You know, he just was. And they filled a big hole really well at third base and did all that stuff offensively. So I like him. I like him in the Twins lineup. But if that's the case, if that rumor is true and they make that deal, I actually think that the Twins should make that deal. Because I mean, free up as much money as you can. Mm-hmm. We know that they're going to need to pay for pitching somehow. They're going to have to pay pitchers. You free up some money and give yourself some flexibility to help out on the mound, because that's obviously the biggest issue. I don't think with Donaldson in the lineup, the Twins can hit enough to overcome the pitching that they have at the moment.
What does that say about the Twins' desire to compete next year if they don't keep Josh Donaldson?
Well, what it says is that they're in the predicament that we have been saying that they're in, which mm-hmm. is we got to rebuild, and oh yeah, we got to compete at the same time, and that, you know, that we got to compete is really a you know, I mean, it's a soporific for the fans. I mean, you know, you're just going to try and show the fans that you're trying to compete. Okay, I kind of get that, but that's more superficial than going out and really getting deep in the amount of talent you have in the minor leagues and the amount of talent you have on the mound. You know, I think that's the more in-depth important thing. I mean, and fans are just, I mean, I know it's bad. You could lose money. Fans won't show up. People will be mad. But they won't be so mad in the ensuing years if for 5 years in a row they're a really good team. And they're not going to be a good team for 5 years in a row if they do nothing this winter. They're not. So they've got to, you know, they have to go with who they think their young kids are. That, I mean, they've put a lot of faith in the fact that three or four or five young kids, position players and pitchers, are going to be really good major league players. And if they, you know, if they're wrong about that, then it's, you know, they got bigger issues.
Let me correct myself here on the trade. It'd be Josh Donaldson and $15 million in cash going to the Brewers for Jackie Bradley Jr. and left-handed pitching prospect Antoine Kelly.
Boy, Kelly would have to be really good for me to like that deal.
And they're trading for Jackie Bradley. That's another suggestion that they're not bringing Buxton back.
Yeah. And again, this is a rumor.
Yes.
This is not fact.
All of a sudden, I hate the deal.
Yeah. Now, we are kicking around a rumor. This is not something we have vetted. We're just kicking around ideas here. I don't think they make that deal. No, they don't make that deal. But Roy's hitting the key point here. Selfishly, and because I'm old and impatient, I want them to continue to compete and really compete and try to win. I would rather see them keep Donaldson and take that $15 million they were going to give to the Brewers and invest in starting pitching. If they're not, but the bigger point is what they probably don't want to do, and I think this is what one of the things Roy's getting at, you don't want to get caught in between. You don't want to be, well, we're kind of trying to compete, but we're not going to do it very well. We're also not going to rebuild and give our young kids a chance, and we're just going to end up being a team that wins 78 games and fakes being competitive. You do want to pick a lane, you know, because if you're going to compete, go spend the money and sell it and go. And if you're not going to compete, then bring up the kids and see what's going to happen.
Yeah, Derek Falvey said that. He says straddling is the worst thing you can do in these situations.
Exactly right.
He's used that phrase before. So you're either trying to win or you're trying to regroup here. So in everything he has said toward the end of the season and since the season's ended was that they're going to try to compete next year. Once again, I don't see how you could say you're going to be competitive if you don't have Byron Buxton on the roster next year.
I agree with you.
I totally agree. I hate the deal if it's Jackie Bradley at the press. I hate that.
Yes. Let me reintroduce the lineup here. Brandon Morton is our longtime producer. Roy Smalley is the former baseball star turned broadcaster. Lavelle E. Neal, longtime baseball writer for the Star Tribune, now writing a column for the Star Tribune. I'm Jim Suhan, also from the Star Tribune. We do appreciate you joining us. Lavelle, tell us about our newest sponsor. I'm really excited about going there and checking this place out.
Yeah, you know, 11 Wells Distillery is just east of downtown St. Paul. I've been there before a few years ago. I went and checked out the place. It's a cool place. It's the old Ham's Brewery near downtown St. Paul. Okay. It's a bunch of buildings that make up that brewery, and they've got one section of this complex. Okay. Now, here's where I had to go do some research because this is the part where I didn't pay attention in school. So this brewery is sitting. This brewery is sitting on. Well, this whole site is sitting on apparently atop of one of the best aquifers in the region. Okay, and I had to go do study on underground aquifers and how big they are and how they collect water. It just kills me. You can drill down thousands of feet and find like fresh water, and that just baffles my mind. But anyway, so it's sitting on this aquifer. So 11 wells is drilled down 400 feet. To tap into one of the aquifers, and they use the water from the aquifer to make their whiskeys. And so
now So the land of sky blue waters, the land of beautiful brown water.
That's right. Exactly. So it's a great setup to have a nice little tasting room in the back. You walk in, it's rather an eclectic mix of like older furniture and chairs and stuff. You go, you keep walking down, and then there's the bar. They have great cocktails. They make fantastic old fashions. Mm. I had one with the Minnesota, aged Minnesota 13 whiskey, which was absolutely delicious. They've got rye whiskey, they got wheat whiskey, they got bourbon. Aged Minnesota 13 whiskey is what I'm talking about. Unaged Minnesota 13. Single malts, all kinds of whiskeys there. I got a tour of the building. I saw where all the magic happens, saw all the barrels and the mash and everything they use to make these whiskeys. And it's just a really cool place to hang out. They get good traffic during hockey season. Wild fans come in before games and sip some whiskey before they go over to the X and watch hockey games. And they're open on Fridays and Saturdays. And
is it kind of a dress-up place or more of a casual sports bar?
Casual place. You can walk in, you know, sweatshirt, jeans, shorts.
Lavelle is going back.
Good point. Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point.
Yes.
It's Lavelle casual.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. So I wholeheartedly recommend it. You know, they are a sponsor here on the Chin Music Podcast, but it's a place I've been to before, yep. You know, so when I speak about it, it's not because they're just a sponsor. I speak about it because I've tried their product many times.
And I will be trying their product soon. I can't wait. Really fired up about it.
Yes.
And reminder, one more reminder, Pizza Luce, October 20th, that's Wednesday night, 6 o'clock, Eden Prairie. GPS said it'll get you close enough.
Did you know there's underground aquifers as deep as 30,000 feet?
I had no idea.
I had no idea.
You know, it's funny. The classes that I paid the least attention to in school are the ones I wish I had paid the most attention to.
Yeah, but you know, the thing that is baffling me, Lavelle, I mean, of all the things you said you could have, you paid more attention to, I mean, if you say, well, you know, I should have paid more attention to algebra, you know, I mean, that's, not knowing about what an aquifer is, I mean, that's kind of about number 170th on the list of school subjects. I mean, holy cow, you got deep into some of this stuff.
Algebra. Okay, first of all, why do you think I'm a writer? Well, I tried to apply myself in math. It was a mess.
I wish I had paid more attention in science, and I wish I had learn to speak a foreign language past, you know, the stupid guidebooks you had. I wish I could speak Spanish. I wish I could speak Spanish to Spanish baseball players.
Yeah, I screwed that up. I was an honor student in high school, so I took 4 years of French, and that satisfied my requirement for college.
Exactly what I did.
And I have no application for Francais.
I cannot speak French. I got out of taking it, and I shouldn't have gotten out of taking it. I should have taken Spanish. I should have taken 4 years in high school and 4 years in college so I could actually speak it.
Well, we have problems with kids even learning how to speak English. They should be learning Spanish as well. We should learn how to talk to each other.
You're making a good point.
Trivia.
Hey, one more Twins topic before we talk about baseball at large. Austin Martin, what are your assessments of him? What's your hope for him? How quickly do you think he can arrive? How big an impact can he make? Let's start with Lavelle on this one.
Well, the Twins had Austin Martin number one on their draft board the year that he came out. Wow. So they were fired up at the possibility of getting him as part of the Jose Barrios deal. He has shown very little power. He's shown some ability to hit doubles. And a lot of times doubles become homers as you get older and wiser. You know, but they've already started working with him on trying to untap some of that pop they think he has in his bat. But he can hit for average. He can get on base. He wants to stick it short. You know, people, it's like he's like Royce Lewis. They're like, he looks like he profiles better in center field than he does at shortstop. But Martin wants to stay at short for now. So they're going to work with him. He's probably going to play both positions here. They're going to work with him and see if they could clean up some things. I don't know if it's range or arm. I think they're a little worried about his arm strength at short. That's why I asked Falvey. I says, is range still a big factor in the era of shifting for a shortstop? He thinks it still is. So I get that. I like to eyeball him and see him play in person before I can, you know, pass further judgment on him. But I like everything I see on the surface.
Yeah, I haven't seen him either, so I'm really just speculating here based on what people say. So there are some positive things and negative things that are between the lines of, to me, of what people are saying. I've talked about this before. Anytime you got this great shortstop prospect, but he can also play center field. That is just a gigantic shout from the rooftops that they don't really believe he's the answer defensively at shortstop. I mean, and so if Jorge Polanco is going to play short, they never thought he was the answer either. But they've got things they have to get accomplished. So that's one thing. I would love for him to be the answer at shortstop, especially if he doesn't have a lot of power. But he has, and here's the positive thing that I'm hearing: the bat to ball skills. When you know, if they had him number one on their board, and now through Double A baseball, he has shown that evaluation made sense because his ability to put the 8 inches of the barrel on the ball consistently. I think of Don Mattingly when he came up, and I was there in '82 with the Yankees when Donnie first came to the big leagues, and he was a slap to left field hitter, and he was a 300 hitter. Everybody knew he came up and played a little bit in '82, and all you do is watch his approach at the plate. Watch the way he could hit the ball to all fields, but especially the opposite way, especially with two strikes. And you said, okay, this guy's going to be a good major league hitter. Nobody dreamed that he was going to end up having the power. And it was a little – I actually did an interview with Donnie one time when he was here as a manager of I don't remember Marlins, where he was. Must have been the Marlins. And
what year was this?
He taught just, I don't know. I mean, you can't ask me years. It could be 3 years, it could be 7 years.
When he was a Dodgers manager?
So I kind of think it was when he was with the Dodgers. Anyway, he talked to me about the little change in his swing path. And interestingly enough, it's totally different than the lift and separate swing path everybody's talking about now. Totally different. But he said, you know, you and I both worked with Lou Piniella, you know, in New York, you know, on hitting. And, you know, Lou was the de facto hitting coach there. You know, he's a part-time player and still playing himself. But we'd get in the cage with him and work on a lot of things. He said, you remember when Lou was telling me about this, you know, how to do this one thing, it turned me around. It got me the ability to hit to pull the ball without giving up my ability to wait on it a long time and make sure that I recognize pitches and all that kind of stuff. I only bring all of this stuff up to say that when you've got a guy that can put, like I said, that 8 inches of the barrel on the ball on all pitches to all fields and hit 300 and do all those things, then there's a good chance that he's going to be a good major league hitter for average, and he's got a chance to be a lot more than just a you know, line drive singles hitter.
I did read a story about him, and he was quoted saying that since he's joined the Twins, they have done more work with him in terms of hitting and approach and looking at data than he ever did with the Blue Jays.
Good.
And he's absorbing it all. He thinks it's something that's going to make him a better hitter.
The thing about that is you can work with good hitters that have the ability that know where the big end of the barrel, where the sweet spot of the barrel is all the time, you can change those guys around. If a guy is not that proficient, he's not that solid in terms of getting the big end of the bat to the ball on a consistent basis, then you try to do some other things. It's harder for those guys. It just is, because you have some mechanics issues that don't get the big end of your bat to the ball as efficiently as a guy like Austin Martin, evidently, or Don Mattingly, you know, demonstrably had. So that's sometimes I would say, you know, they're going to work with this guy to try to get him hit the ball to the ballpark more, you know, or hit the ball to the opposite field more. And I'm going, I don't know. I look at that swing now, and he's going to go through a lot. I'm not saying he can't do it, but he's going to go through a lot. With a guy that can square it up consistently, you got a chance to do some things with him.
And to remind people, Austin Martin the Twins traded for him. He was the fifth pick in the 2020 MLB draft. He spent 3 years at Vanderbilt. He's had 1 year in the minors. He started at Double A, so he's 22, a little young for a Double A prospect, high on base percentage, not a lot of power. But I did see clips of him hitting home runs. And when he did get his pitch, he looked like, I mean, if you all you saw was his home run swing, you go, oh, that guy's hitting 40 home runs a year. He launched it. I mean, he put his body into it. It wasn't an accident that he hit it over the fence. So he has to develop power, but it looks like he has the right kind of swing that once he gets stronger, he'll be able to do it. Right now, he's listed at 6 feet, 185 pounds. He's still a very young, lean guy at this point.
So here's the thing about that, too, about, you know, you like his home, the swing on the home run, when he hit the home run. A lot of times, and this was the case, this is the case with me, and I think that Austin Martin probably has a lot better bat-to-ball skills than I had from the sound of it, but you can just do little things, like you can just learn things about how to approach pitching and how to approach counts, right? I mean, you get a guy that hits high for high average, and this was one of the things that Mattingly was talking about. You hit for a high average, and you don't give your ability enough chance to come out for power because you're so focused on not being fooled, or you're so focused on, you know, this line drive up the middle of the opposite way that has always been the way you've hit 300, and you know, just little things like, you know what, 2-0, 3-1, first ball pitch sometimes, cheat on a fastball. You know, pick out a spot out there in front of the plate and get the big end out there instead of waiting back here over the plate to hit the ball the opposite field. And a guy that can hit, you just move his sights out a little bit and say, look, don't worry if you swing and miss a changeup or something on a first ball pitch or 2-0. I mean, you can always go back. When a guy's a good two-strike hitter, or when a guy has the ability to get a lot of base hits, you know, giving away a pitch to try to hit the ball hard to your pull field, you know, cheat a little bit, that's nothing. That's nothing for them. I mean, because they're, you know, it's like Joe Mauer. You know, it's like, Joe, cheat. You know, cheat to get there because you're the best two-strike hitter I've ever seen in my life. You know, it doesn't bother you. You don't care. You hit the two strikes, it's no different, right? So that could be the case with a guy like Austin Martin, where it's not even a big swing change. It's a little bit of a mental realization that, look, you can control the pitcher and the count based on where you're trying to hit the ball and what you think you're going to get and all those kinds of things. And it could be something as relatively easy as that for him.
At TalkNorth.com, we have tons of quality outdoor content in association with Ron Chera Productions and Travis's work and all that. We have the best sports lineup in town, Russo LaPanta, our friend Anthony LaPanta, John Millay, Jeff Diamond, John Krasinski. We have just great sports stuff, and we have a bunch of variety shows, including Raising Your Paws. We're going to be adding some big names in the next month or two. Thank you for getting us to this point. And the best way to listen, subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It's easy. It's free. You can also always go to TalkNorth.com, see the archives and the full show lineup. Thanks also to our sales executive, Karen Cleary. If you ever need to reach Karen, you can reach her at KCLEARY@TalkNorth.com. And we want to thank our sponsors, Better Edge.
Combine your love for competition, social, and sports with Better Edge, the sports betting exchange that actually gives back to its bettors. Better Edge is a brand new locally based betting platform meant to connect users and attempt to add some coin to the bank. Completely legal and 100% fun. Compete against friends, sports insiders, and yourself with Better Edge in a number of different sports and event competitions. Use code CHIN, C-H-I-N, for a free $10 when you sign up by visiting BetterEdge.com. That's BETTOR Edge.com.
We'd also like to thank Minnesota Propane. It is still grilling season because it's always grilling season.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera. And did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy right now.
All right, let's get into the baseball playoffs. Great series between the Dodgers and the Giants. I have to say, in accordance with many of our conversations on this network, I was pulling for the Giants because they put a starting pitcher on the mound last night and they let him go as long as he could.
Yeah, that was awesome. And he was awesome. And that guy can pitch. I was watching last night and the movement on his fastball and then the to combine with the movement on the slider going the other direction. I watched a few pitches last night and go, man, am I glad I'm here. Right here watching that from the center field camera and not from the batter's box, because that is nasty stuff, man. There's 95 with that kind of movement. I mean, that's good stuff. So is Urias, by the way. Awfully good, you know, obviously. But it was a great series. All of the series were really good series. I mean, it has been really fun, you know, to watch. The Red Sox-Rays series was terrific. And so it's been what I always hope for, which is, God, get me to the postseason. Let me just watch all these players do what they do and these teams do what they do. And I will just say that, you know, when we talked about this before everything ever started, I think it was from Pizza Luce when we were there and we're going back. You asked Jim about who we think, you know, to look out for. And LaBelle and I both said Dodgers, because I mean, how can you not with that, you know, with that talent? And ultimately it came through. But I liked Houston, and I still think Houston's awfully dangerous, because they can pitch just enough all from front to back, right? There's no real drop off. They may not have the Dodgers starting pitching. They may not even have the Dodgers bullpen, but they can hit, and front to back, they're competent on the mound. And so it's going to be a great, with the way the Red Sox can swing the bat, that's going to be, you know, a great series. And just more of the same, more good baseball stuff.
What did you think about the 13-inning classic on Sunday and the controversy over the ground rule double and having to send Yandy Diaz back to third?
Well, we were talking about when the ball hit the fence and hit the right fielder and bounced over. Well, so, I mean, that is the rule. Mm-hmm. So really the question is, should it be that rule? I mean, should that be the rule? Because you can't do it. I mean, the rule's a rule. It's plain as day.
Yeah,
they called it correctly. Now, you know, if the question becomes, should it be that rule? And my son came up to me and said the other day and said, it can't be that rule. Can't be like that. It's got to be something different, because the offensive team always gets penalized in a situation. There's never ever a penalty to the defense, and I think that he hit exactly on what everybody is upset about in terms of that rule. I think about the chaos that would ensue if you didn't have that rule,
right?
Because if you don't have that rule, it's a total judgment call by the umpires about where everybody is. And okay, so maybe you could challenge that and go back. But it's going to be
still going to be a
judgment call. And what happens if you have to decide where a runner on first base would have gotten to, and he trips over Lonnie Smith, he trips over second base and falls down? So do you say, well, if he hadn't tripped, he would have got? Yeah. I mean, there's just so many things that occur to me that say, you know, I understand how the rule happened, because it's so much judgment on top of judgment on top of judgment on top of some things that could happen, that now what do we do with that?
Yeah.
What do we do if a guy running from first to second slips and falls down? Now he's going to score easily, but now he's not. So, you know, maybe he doesn't even get to second. So now the old rule is he gets at least third. You know, he gets third. I don't know. I think it's one of those things that you can't figure out.
Yeah, I thought about all those things too, and I arrived at a simplest conclusion, is that Fenway Park's the only stadium that has a 16-inch wall in right field. And so we're not going to worry about this in most ballparks.
Well, that's absolutely true. It's not going to happen very often. Yeah, right. It really is not going to happen very often. So, I mean, I hit a ball. I hit a ball 365 feet over the 370 sign one time, you know, and against Mike Flanagan in Baltimore in the old ballpark, and Pat Kelly was playing left field. And fortunately for me, because Pat Kelly was a nice player, good hitter, but he wasn't the best outfielder. He runs back and he puts his glove up, and I'm running. I can see the whole thing developing. And I go, man, he's going to catch it. He puts his glove up, kind of backhand the ball just onto the warning track. The ball hits him right in the palm and bounces over, you know, over the fence. and I get a home run in it because that's the rule, and Pat and that's Kelly. The way it kind of feels to me like these kind of rules are. I mean, should that have been? It should be a double because it looked like the ball would have been in the ballpark. You know, I mean, I think you have to figure out what the best thing. But speaking of Pat Kelly, by the way, you probably heard this. One of my favorite. Pat Kelly, my favorite Earl Weaver.
Play for the White Sox.
Earl Weaver stories. Earl going crazy on it. Pat Kelly is a wonderful man, a very Christian man, and he's on the bench, and Weaver's going crazy, and just invectives and profanity spewing out of his mouth out toward umpires and you know whoever else, and Pat Kelly walked up to him and said, Earl, I'd really like to see you walk with the Lord. You know, and Weaver turns around and said, Pat, I'd really like to see you walk with the bases loaded one goddamn time.
Oh, I was so lucky to grow up watching the Orioles. He's not only great baseball, but great freaking characters. And Palmer always needling. I mean, has there ever been quite a relationship like Palmer
and Weaver? No, there's never been.
Just needle, Earl, make fun of them.
Earl, infield's back. Our infield's in. I know I want to cut off the run. I don't get an F. I don't give an F. Get him the hell back. You know, I mean, Palmer would just be yelling at Earl about managing in the dugout. You know, it was great. Oh. Just great stuff. And I apologize about the using the Lord's name in vain there a minute ago, but that was the story. And
that's the story.
And so I'm sticking to it.
Well, speaking of using the Lord's name in vain, what do you think about Giants fans after Wilmer Flores was deemed to go around with his swing for the final out last night?
What are you going to do about fans? I hate that kind of stuff.
It was a terrible call, though.
It was a terrible call.
Yeah, I read a tweet from Trevor Plouffe, who I think he's onto something. He said, you know, how about a little bit less down on the umpire who had to make a call in real time and doesn't have the ability to look at instant replay and all that kind of stuff. And so he had to make a call he thought was right in real time. We'll think less about that and more about make more things reviewable.
Yeah.
You know, just because the only way you can really see that, it's all over the map, what they call a swing and what they don't call a swing. It's again, talk about a judgment call and it's happening in real time. And that barrel of the bat is moving quickly. And, you know, that's a hard call. That's why hitters have always pleaded with home plate umpires to get help, because at least the guy down the line, the opposite line, has a little bit, you know, better chance. But I'm always, I mean, I saw somebody talking about the rule as it is now about check swings. And this guy was saying, well, it's just, it really should be about intent to swing. That's total BS.
Yeah.
Every time your hands move forward, you have an intent to swing. Yeah, it's not an intent to swing. It's whether or not you change your intent in time not to intend to do that.
Yes.
I mean, it's crazy.
I had a phone conversation with a colleague of ours, Jim, and he was like, I just want to point out to you that Dave Morales, the first base umpire, was also the umpire who threw Mulder out in 2015 when he argued on a check swing by Miguel Sano.
Patrick, man.
Only Patrick will remember.
Only Patrick remembers. I had Chip on my show, Blocked and Muted, my podcast on this network. I had Chip on because Chip is writing Royce's book, and I think it just came out. And he said, you know, it's like when Royce wrote Sid's book, I guess I'm going to be writing your book. We all start to become columnists, write each other's books, I guess. So I'll be doing the Lavelle E. Neal life story. We'll do the G version, though, just to protect the children. So when Royce did Sid's book, he had everything Sid told him was inaccurate. Everything Sid told him was wrong, and Royce would have to go back and find the truth. And Royce spent most of his time researching stuff Sid got wrong, either on purpose or accidentally. That was the whole book writing process. Sid said this, it was wrong, I got to change to this. Chip said Royce remembers everything accurately. Because Chip, went and did the research and would double check everything. He said every time Patrick goes, oh, 1942, Wally the beer man threw a bag of peanuts left-handed. You know, everything he said was exactly accurate.
Wow.
I can't do that.
No. That's amazing. And some of the stories he tells is when he was still drinking.
Yes, and the best stories when he was drinking.
Yes,
and I always congratulate Patrick on a brilliant career move. He drank long enough to have a lifetime filled with incredible stories that would not have happened if he were sober, and then he got cleaned up in time to be able to last a long time telling those stories. It's brilliant.
Working with Patrick's been a treat. I'll never forget, I went down to cover the winter meetings, and they were in New Orleans. So Royce wrote a column, which is an open letter to me, warning me of all the dangers that await me once I get to New Orleans. And so he was telling a story about how he was determined to drink up all the gin in New Orleans one night. And felt miserably. And he came stumbling into the hotel and went up to the front desk. I need a wake-up call for 8:15 a.m. Sorry, Mr. Royce. We can't do that here. Why not? I need a wake-up call for 8:15. Mr. Royce, it's already 8:45.
That is the best Royce story. So, and there are a lot of great Royce stories, but that's there. And here's what it was like to work with Patrick back when he was the traveling columnist and Lavelle and I were baseball writers. We are the A's. Eliminate the Twins in a third game at the Oakland Coliseum. We're on deadline. It's me, Joe, Lavelle, and Royce sitting side by side in that cramped, crappy old press box, cranking away.
Which still exists.
On deadline. And, you know, and the problem with working with Patrick was you had to write Patrick's column before you could write your own.
Yes!
You had to answer. Patrick never opened a book if there's a writer next to him. He said, what year did Rube Waddle, what year was he born? Patrick, yeah. I don't know.
What's a popular beer in Kansas City?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. We're sitting, again, Twins, A's, playoff series, deadline in Oakland. Twins just got eliminated. And Patrick leaned back and goes, what's the name of the microbrew in Kansas City?
Yes.
And somehow that became part of his lead. And I don't know how he did it, but he's a very gymnastic fellow when it comes to writing.
You would know exactly what he was writing about because he's also repeating stuff he's writing down.
He would. If you worked with Patrick, you never had to read his column in the morning paper. He read the whole thing.
That was the case. That was the case for anybody that he talked to. I love Patrick, I mean, he has written so many great and funny things and good things, smart things over the years. But I really, really cringe when he would come up to me when I was in the press box, you know, get in between, you know, watching the game to do the post game show or something. And he would come up to me and he would do this wherever I was. He would make a comment to me about what he was going to write. I knew that's what he was going to write, but he wanted a reaction from me, and I don't want to give it to him because most of the time he would come up, and I knew it, and as soon as I heard it, it was going to be a controversial column, and I was, you know what, I don't want to be, it's just not my place to go there, right? I'm sitting in my chair in the press box one time and watching a game, and he comes up. This is when, after Joe Mauer went through the leg injury stuff, you know, all this stuff, and then he went through a time that one year when he really wasn't hitting well at all, and Royce came up to me and he says, "Hey Roy, I can remember back in the day when Joe Mauer could actually hit." And I go, "Oh man, that's pretty funny, Pat."
I don't want to say anything.
I'm not going to say anything about that.
It's in the column
because I know. Yeah, and it was just. And Smalley, who knows a lot about hitting, thinks that I'm right
he
about it.
He thinks Joe Mauer sucks.
I'm going on. I go, Pat, that's really funny. That's a good line.
I did radio with Patrick, and when Patrick and I did a radio show together, he never once asked for my opinion. He would just state his opinion and expect me to agree with him.
Yeah, well, exactly. And Sulan says.
Yes. Sulan agrees with me. At least I think so.
So that could be one hell of a book, though.
Yes. All right, so we're going to start working on our books. We'll announce when they're going to be ready for publication. Until then, next show will be October 20th, Wednesday night, 6 o'clock at the Pizza Luce in Eden Prairie. Come out, join us. We're going to have a lot of fun. We don't just talk about baseball. We'll talk about other sports and liquor and everything else. Hey, thank you for listening to Start to TalkNorth.com. We appreciate it. We'll see you Wednesday.